Hey, church, I'm so glad that you are here today. Those of you who are in the room, I'm looking at eyeballs right now, and I can see you smiling even underneath those masks. Your eyes are smiling. I'm so glad that you're with us today. Those of you who are joining us online, welcome. Welcome to week two of this Enough series. We're asking the question each week, is Jesus enough to cover over fill in the blank? Is he enough for my, and we're discovering that whatever the question is, whatever is in that blank, Jesus is enough for. I hope that you are taking that challenge seriously, what Daniel was just talking about, to invest in and invite somebody to join you for Easter this year. It's going to be off the hook here at Venture. We're gearing up for it. We're looking forward to it. And we'd love nothing more than to see your friend, your family member, your neighbor, whoever it is that you invest in and invite to come and join you. Between now and then, each week we're asking that question, is Jesus enough? Next week we're going to be looking at, is he enough to cover my loss? Then my sins, my discouragement the following week. And then Easter, we're going to even talk a little bit about doubt. Is Jesus enough to cover? Last week, I talked about scarcity. Asked, is Jesus enough to cover my scarcity? And some of you, maybe you're joining online or some of you are in the room. The last several weeks, we've had guests at just about every service we've had. People kind of sticking their toe in the water and asking, is this the kind of church that we want to bring our family to, that we want to be a part of? Can I just say this? I love our church. I'm proud of our church. I am grateful personally for our church, this Enough series. I'm not preaching at you. I'm talking with you. I need to be reminded of these truths that, yes, Jesus is enough. Last week I talked about scarcity, and I shared with you that our family, well, we were praying, and we were kind of journeying through a mental health issue with one of our boys, and he spent a couple weeks inpatient at a mental health facility, and oh my goodness, the cards that I got, the notes of encouragements that we got, emails that we got, thank you, church, thank you for your prayers. We got to go pick Jordan up from the hospital on Wednesday. He's home with us. Jesus is enough. And I'm grateful for a healthy community that I get to do life together with. I'm just so grateful for our church, and I'm proud of our church. And if you're looking for a good church home and you don't have one, we'd love to have you join us here at Venture. Jesus is enough. This week we're talking about this true statement. Jesus is enough for my fears. What are you afraid of? I want to spend just a little bit of time here on the front end of this message. Could we play just a little bit? Could we play, we'll call it a quiz show. This show is called, Does Pastor Stan, Can He Pronounce Latin Derivative Words? Because I want to share with you a whole bunch of phobias that apparently Americans have. These are the top 10. And let's just see, are you smarter than a fifth grader or whatever that game is? So maybe feel free to play along, whoever you're sitting in a row with. Keep your own score. Bonus points for, you know, the funniest answer, whatever. Play along at home as well. These are the top 10 phobias that Americans face. Number one, how many of you know what arachnophobia is? Yeah, that one's almost a gimme. Maybe you saw the movie when you were a kid like me. Of course, this is the fear of spiders. Second one, here, this is hard to pronounce. Ophidiophobia, phobia, that one. Anybody know what that is? Oh, not as many hands. I see a couple. You were here at first service. Caught you. You ever see that Samuel L. Jackson movie? I hate to call it a movie. It's officially, take this to the bank, the worst movie ever produced. It's called Snakes on a Plane. You ever see that one? Horrible movie. That'll give you an idea of what this is all about. This is the fear of snakes. Let's just put them all up there so you can be scanning these and you can be kind of planning and thinking ahead. Number three, acrophobia. Anybody know what that is? Some of you do. This is the fear of heights. Give yourself a bonus point for that. How about agoraphobia, number four? I think the agora was actually a location in Greek or Roman culture. This maybe give you an idea of what this might be all about. This is the fear of situations in which escape might be difficult. like a crowded space. I kind of think claustrophobia might be connected to that. How about number 5, cynophobia? Anybody know what that is? Do any of you work in the post office, the postal service? Are you mail people? This is the fear of dogs. So usually this gets tied to an early childhood experience or maybe a mail carrier person that gets into some tangles with dogs as they're on their mail route. Okay, number 6, astrophobia. Astrophobia. The disciples of Jesus, as we're going to discover here in just a few minutes, they had legitimate reasons to have this phobia because this is the fear of thunder and lightning. I didn't know that one. Had to look it up. Trypanophobia. Trypanophobia. Yeah, I can't pronounce these. Anybody know what that is? Well, some of us are about to. This is the fear of injections. The whole world is getting the vaccine right now. I'm loving this season of our culture and our church life. There's a sweet couple in our church that's in this service. And I saw them face to face last week for the first time in about a year, right? Over here under the cross, they came walking over to me and they were wearing masks. I could see the smiles under their faces and there was a big old smile under my face. I literally said, y'all are a sight for sore eyes. It had been almost a year. Well, we just got our injection. We just got the vaccine, and here we are back to church, and I'm so excited about this season, getting to see more and more of your faces. How about this one, number 8, social phobias? That's a gimme. That's you're afraid of social situations. I'm not even going to try to pronounce. Number 9, anybody know what this is? So terra, I think, is Latin or Greek, has something to do with terra firma, the earth. There must be something in there that's against the earth because this is like literally leaving earth, a fear of leaving earth. This is the fear of flying. And apparently, the way you treat a fear of flying is you put somebody on a plane and you make them work through it. Now, if you pair number 9 with number 2, you fill the plane with snakes. And then you just kind of sit back and watch what happens. Number 10, misophobia. This is the fear of germs. I suspect the whole world right now is ramping up on that one as we've lived through a pandemic. I got a text message and I got several like Facebook messages after the first service. A bunch of people said, you forgot one. And they sent this to me, caurophobia, caurophobia, which apparently is the fear of clowns. If that's a phobia, I probably have that one because clowns are just wrong. Okay, so what are you afraid of? It feels like there's a whole lot of reasons, maybe fear options, if you will, in the world these days. Years ago, our family went to Hilton Head on vacation. How many of you have been to Hilton Head? I love that space. Hilton Head is the kind of place we're there for a week, about halfway through the week, where we've rented the bikes and we're doing all the bike paths all over Hilton Head next to the water. And about halfway through, it dawns on me, this is so fun, we're loving this. And then I'm thinking, well, we come from Hamilton County, there are bike paths, we can bike anywhere we want to go all the time back home. Why don't we do that there? We drive all the way here to ride our bikes. But, you know, we were doing the beach vacation thing. The kids were tiny. We did the obligatory photos one of the nights. And here we are, the kiddos playing in the water. And those are real waves behind them. I mean, the waves were crashing against the shoreline. This is the photo where, you know, we act like we're JCPenney's models. And we pose and we get the picture taken. My youngest, Jake, he was a tiny little guy on this vacation. I think it might have even been the day before that picture was taken. We are on the beach, crowded beach. Dawn says, listen, I'm going to take 4 of the kids. They're my responsibility. Dad, you think you can handle 1? I said, absolutely. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. I'm super dad. I've got this. They're all playing out in the ocean. I'm sitting in the beach chair. And I've got my book or whatever, and here's Jake playing in the sand. He's got his sand toys. He's got the hat and the sunglasses. He's cute. And I'm watching him, and I'm reading my book. I look up. He's playing. That's great. I go back to reading my book. I look up, and my whole family's out there in the waves, and they're all like waving at me. And I'm, hey. And then I'm looking at their faces, and especially Dawn's face. And I've seen this face before. I feel like I might be in trouble right now. And then I see Micah, one of my boys, running toward me, and he shouts, Dad, where's Jake? And I say, he's right. He's not there. Panic. Fear. we find him at least 2 lifeguard stations down the beach, crowded beach. And for that 5 minutes, 10 minutes, I don't know, it felt like 4 hours. I don't know how much time passed between this moment and that moment of finding him. I do know this, that my heart panic. I was just sure he's out there struggling to stay above the water somewhere. He's drowned. I'm just sure he's drowned. And I'm just sure in that moment that it's my fault. What are you afraid of? Can you feel it? Even this moment, probably 10 years later, I still feel the fear coming up in my throat there. I've woken up at night scared, dreaming about that moment. What are you afraid of? I listened to a podcast, 3 months ago probably. The winner of the TV show Alone. Have you seen this one on Netflix? I think it might have been on the History Channel or something like that before. The winner of season 6 of Alone. Here's the way this reality show goes. They drop people out in the Arctic, right? Like way up north in Canada. And you show up with like maybe 10 items that are survival gear kind of things. Like maybe you bring a bow and arrow. Maybe you bring a knife. You're probably going to bring a pan to cook with. But you've got nothing but the clothes on your back and these necessities, and you've got no food. Your job is to find all that stuff, food, shelter, create that, clothing. You just have what you're wearing on your back. I mean, you do this, and the one that outlasts gets some kind of a prize. Well, the winner of this, in this interview, he's talking about what this was all about. And as he was talking about how this moment of laying in his shelter between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m., St. John of the Cross, one of the early Christian mystics, talked about that time period at night as the dark night of the soul, when your brain just starts to spin a little bit out of control. And he talked about his experience. He talked about how he was able to shoot a moose. And then he had to defend all that moose meat from, get this, wolverines. And there's a part of this story where he has to go out and literally fight for his food and kill a wolverine. But that wasn't the most scary thing. He talked about just laying there and worrying about his family back home, worrying about his own health, just worrying about how, and feeling fear about just, I'm all by myself here, and what could go wrong? Am I going to have enough food to last? What are you afraid of today? What the question he was asking, I don't know if he's a Jesus person or not, but he's really asking a question, is Jesus enough? If I've got food and shelter and clothing, is he enough to cover my fears? If you're taking notes today, and I sure hope you are, there are some truths about fear that we want to explore today. And I wonder just maybe if you're wrestling with fear, these would be the kind of notes you'd want to pull out later this week or a week or two from now and just scan through these true statements. Here's one. Life is scary. But Jesus is Lord. Lord means boss. Lord means he's in control. He's in charge. Life is scary, but Jesus is Lord. It seems like fear is on the rise today. And I'm not talking about phobias necessarily. I'm talking about just good old-fashioned fear. And some of it for good reason. I suspect that some of us were worried about things like, and we're fearing things like, listen, is my job pandemic proof? I get the question. And you fear that, and you think about that, and then you let your mind start to spin, twirl, and maybe get out of control a little bit, and then you look around at politics, and that increases your fear. And then you look around and say, hey, listen, are we staring at a recession? Do we have enough money to get through that kind of a time period? And then you're maybe wondering, listen, are there relational loss in my life? What am I fearing? And your mind just starts spinning. And then you start asking questions like, is this weird season, like, has this affected me? Like in profound ways, has this changed me? Or then if you're a parent, you start asking questions like, how has this changed my kids? How has this affected them? You see that dark night of the soul, 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. How does your brain spin out of control? I saw this past week, this article. I love this. If you're asking the question that we just talked about with your kids, listen to this truth. God tells us, over 300 times in the Bible not to fear. He has a plan, and he's still in charge. You can trust him in that. So don't feel sorry for or fear for your kids, because the world they're going to grow up in is not what it used to be. Well, maybe it's not. But God created them and called them for the exact moment in time that they're in. Their life wasn't a coincidence, and it was not an accident. Raise them up to know the power they walk in as children of God. Train them up in the authority of his word. Teach them to walk in faith, knowing that God is in control. Empower them to know that they can change the world. Don't teach them to be fearful and disheartened by the state of the world, but hopeful that they can do something about it. Every person in all of history, I love this, every person in all of history has been placed in the time that they were because of God's sovereign plan. He, God, knew Daniel could handle the lion's den. He knew David could handle Goliath. He knew Esther could handle Haman. He knew Peter could handle persecution. He knows that your child can handle whatever challenge they face in their life. He created them specifically for it. Don't be scared for your children, but be honored that God chose you to parent the generation that is facing the biggest challenges of our lifetime. Rise up to the challenges. Raise up Daniels, Davids, Esthers, and Peters. God isn't scratching his head wondering what he's going to do with this mess of a world. He has an army he's raising up to drive back the darkness and to make himself known all over the earth. Don't let your fear steal the greatness God placed in them. I know it's hard to imagine them as anything besides our sweet little babies. And we just want to protect them from anything that could be hard on them. But they were born for such a time as this. I love that. I love everything about that. Life is scary, but Jesus is Lord. Jesus is enough to cover over even my fears. If you're taking notes, write this down. Fear is real. Don't deny it. It is real, but Jesus is peace. Oh, long before he was born, he was prophesied to be our Prince of Peace. Jesus is peace, and that's exactly what you need when you're staring fear in the eyeballs. There's a reason why a whole bunch of Bible verses begin with fear not. Because fear, it's real. We have to acknowledge it. But could we take just a moment, and could we just take that fear, whatever it is, whatever you're facing this week, whatever your fear that you're wrestling through, just take that thing, visualize it, put it up here in the forefront of your mind. And then right now where you're sitting, if you trust the person next to you not to do something weird in this moment, you might even want to just close your eyes. If you're at home, you might want to do the same thing and just let God's promises through Scripture just wash over you. And see how when God's promises surround that fear, just see what could happen. Because the world can be a scary place, but Scripture reminds us that we have every reason to trust in God. So let's just look at these passages. Here's 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. For God gave us a spirit, not of fear, but of power and love and self-control. Look at this passage. Psalm 56, verse 3. David wrote this psalm. When I am afraid, I put my trust in you. David knew what it was like to face his fears. David knew what it was like to care for a flock of sheep. He knew what it was like to wake up between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. in the morning. That dark night of the soul moment when life feels the darkest. He knew what it was like to take care of the sheep in the face of an Asiatic tiger. Or an African lion. Those existed in the Holy Land in his day and age. But he wrote this verse. He wrote this, if you look it up in your Bible and you read the heading above that, literally it'll say this, if you have the NIV Study Bible, it's going to say he wrote this when the Philistines had seized him in Gath. these sworn enemies of David, this race of giants. And in their capital city, this is where he is when he writes these words, "When I'm afraid," I bet he was. "I put my trust in you." Isaiah chapter 43 puts it this way. "But now, this is what the Lord says. He who created you, O Jacob, he who formed you, O Israel, fear not. For I've redeemed you. I've called you by name. You're mine. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you." Isaiah is saying, listen, I know there's things that you're afraid of. I know the Assyrians are just like breathing down your necks. There's a reason to be afraid. But Isaiah is pointing backwards so that they can look forward. He's referencing historical moments that have happened here. God was faithful then. God will be faithful now. Jesus has peace to offer. Do you have some giants that are facing you? Oh, the nation of Israel had that on the edge of the Holy Land as they were staring in. They'd sent spies in to kind of look around and see what was awaiting them, and they found giants living there. Maybe you have some giants that you're facing this week. This is what God said to Joshua and through Joshua to the people. "Be strong and courageous. Do not fear or be in dread of them, for it is the Lord your God who goes with you. He will not leave you. He will not forsake you." That might be the most encouraging passage when you're staring at fears. Psalm 34 puts it this way, "I sought the Lord and he answered me and delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to him are radiant. Their faces shall never be ashamed. This poor man cried," this is David saying, "I'm the poor man, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all of his troubles." Jesus puts it this way, "Which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to his span of life? If then you're not able to do as small a thing as that, why are you anxious about the rest?" By the way, anxiety is simply fear stretched out and felt again over and over and over. Paul puts it this way. He had reason to be anxious, writing from a Roman jail cell. He says this in Philippians 4, "Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. So do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication and thanksgiving, let your requests be known to God. And the peace of God," fear is real, but Jesus is peace, "the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." Fear is real, but Jesus is peace. So is fear bad? So I'm supposed to ignore it, right? Just discard it, diminish it? No. No. If you're taking notes, write this down. Be afraid. But fear the correct things. Because appropriate fear is healthy. When I was a kid, I almost picked up a timber rattler. I think that's what it was. It was a rattlesnake. I thought it was a rake. It was a snake. And I jumped back. There's a reason to be afraid of that, because I've done the YouTube searches. I've seen what can happen if one of those things bites you. There's a reason to be afraid of that. I respect that snake enough to give it some distance. I want to spend the rest of the time that we have today looking at two fear-based stories, fear of water-based stories. The first of them is in Mark chapter 4. If you want to go there with me, let's look at what happens. "That day, when evening came, he," Jesus, "said to his disciples, 'Let's go over to the other side.'" Why? Well, because they're around the Sea of Galilee. They're going to leave the Jewish side of the lake, and they're going to be missionaries. They're going over to the other side of the lake where people don't speak their language, literally. And people on their side of the lake know Yahweh God, but on the other side of the lake, they're worshiping false gods, pagan gods. This is where they're going, the heart of a missionary. "Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along," Jesus, "just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him." Hold on to that thought. We're going to make a point with that here in a minute. "A furious squall." I love the details that are found in Scripture. I love the poetic and descriptive language that we have here. "A furious squall." Can't you just feel it? Can't you just picture it? The wind and the waves. Well, it comes up and the waves broke over the boat, so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down and it was completely calm. And he said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." Let me ask you this. They were scared, right? Yeah, they were scared. They were probably worried. They were concerned. But when did they become terrified? At the end of the passage, right? When did they become terrified? When they saw God's power on display. They were fearing the correct things. They were terrified at the moment when Jesus gets up, stern of the boat, and he says to the wind and the waves, "Shut up." And nature responded. He's God. This terrified them, appropriately so. When Jesus revealed his power, listen, over 300 times we read, "Don't be afraid" or "fear not" in the Bible. Many of those times, the story that's being told there, I guarantee you, if you were the key character in the story, you would have been afraid as well. I sure would have. For example, Mary, when Gabriel, the angel, comes to Mary, she's sound asleep, and Gabriel wakes her up and says, "You're going to give birth, and this is going to be the Lord's." So this is Jesus. He says, "Don't be afraid." She had to be scared. I suspect if that was me, you know, listen, we'd have to be changing some sheets later on, because I suspect my bladder would have emptied out in that moment. Angels in the Old Testament and the New Testament, we read about these messengers of God. They were not cuddly. They were beings to be scared of. Be afraid, but fear the correct things. Jesus talks about this, Matthew chapter 10. "What I tell you in the dark, speak in the daylight. What is whispered in your ear, proclaim from the roofs. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body, but can't kill the soul." You're worried about the wrong things. You're afraid of the wrong things. Rather, be afraid of the one, not many, not even some. Be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. You get what he's saying here. Proverbs explains this. If we go back Old Testament, old style, "The fear of the Lord," fear him, that one. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." If we want to be wise, we need to recognize that there is appropriate fear. In relationship to your fears, are you wise? Here's the question. Are you fearing the right things? Are you wasting fear energy on temporary things? When your fear maybe should be appropriately directed on eternal things. Let me put it this way. Let's get real practical. Are you afraid of the virus? Or are you afraid of the God who controls your destiny? Regardless if you live or die. By the way, we all die sometime of something. Let me ask it another way. Are you afraid of your neighbor or for your neighbor who doesn't know Jesus? Doesn't know Jesus, maybe you've not invested in them and you've not invited them to walk this Jesus walk with you. Are you afraid of them dying from a virus, or are you maybe more appropriately afraid of their eternal separation from a loving God, regardless of what they die from? In other words, are you afraid of the right things? Eternal versus temporary. Okay, I told you there's two stories, water fear-based stories we're looking at. We just looked at one. I want to look at another. But before we do that, we need to talk just a bit about hydrology in the Holy Land. We need to talk just a little bit about weather patterns over the Sea of Galilee. I've got some pictures to show you to illustrate this. This is a picture that I took, and I bet you can discern if you look. Here's the water line of the Sea of Galilee. And I'm kind of looking to the north, a little bit to the west here when I took this picture. Beautiful boat on the water. This is the skyline, right? Here is land. This right here, this is horizon of sky. And it's land from here all the way down to here. You see, the Sea of Galilee is in a basin. And it is literally the perfect ingredients for the perfect storm. You've got the Mediterranean Sea over here, and you've got mountains on this side of the Sea of Galilee that raise to all like 1,500 feet above sea level. And then you've got the Golden Heights over here, goes up to like 2,500 feet above sea level. Then you've got the Sea of Galilee itself. Next picture will prove it. This is a super cheap watch I bought from Amazon. And I don't know if you can trust the altimeter, but it says it's minus 712 feet. Yeah, it's about 700 feet below sea level. And there's something about that depression and as wind and air that has water, moisture in it comes over those mountains, and something about that depression, it's the perfect ingredients for the perfect storm. And they've happened multiple times throughout history. Including sometime in the first century. There is a museum right next to the Sea of Galilee. I've been there a couple of times. They discovered a boat in 1986. They call it the Jesus boat or the Sea of Galilee boat. The water level went down. There was a drought, and they noticed this down there. Some fishermen found it, and then the archaeologists came in, and they brought it up, and then they started studying it and seeing what kind of trees, what kind of wood species were growing next to the lake in the time of Jesus. Why the time of Jesus? Well, they radio dated it or carbon dated it or whatever they do. They can't pinpoint it, but they can go 40 years plus or minus the time that Jesus was born. So those other boats that were referenced in the story we just read, you might be looking at one of them. It's probably not the boat that Jesus was in, but it's probably similar to what he would have been in that story and the next. A very simple vessel. This is a model to illustrate what it probably would have looked like. Pretty cool. If you're taking notes, write this down. Jesus brings courage. Jesus brings courage. Let's see how this happens. This is Matthew chapter 14. Just follow along with me if you want to go there. I'm in verse 22 immediately. Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. Different time, different story, probably launching from the same side of the lake. After he dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Then what happened? Well, when evening came, he was there alone, but the boat was already a considerable distance from the land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, what's that? Oh, it's that time period between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. That time before the sunrise when dark feels the darkest. In those moments, like St. John of the Cross talked about, when you experience the dark night of the soul, this is the time this happened. Jesus went out to them walking on the lake, not walking near the lake, not walking next to the lake, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, Tell me to come to you on the water." "Come." Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink, crying out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand immediately and caught him. "You have little faith," he said. "Why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshiped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Then what happened? When they had crossed over, they landed at Gennesaret. This is the other side of the lake. They don't speak the Jewish language. They speak Greek. They're not following Yahweh God. And when the men of that place recognized Jesus, they sent word to all the surrounding country. People brought all their sick to him and begged him to let the sick just touch the edge of his cloak. And all who touched him were healed. Yeah, he could walk on water. This is God. He's worthy of worship. Now, just real quick, let me make some observations about this passage as we try to apply this today. Number one, Jesus acknowledged fear. This was a legitimate fear. By the way, Peter was no water sissy. He grew up next to the water. Actually, I've been to what archaeologists believe to be his house. There's reasons they believe that's his house, good archaeological reasons why they believe that that's his house. Jesus would have spent time there. If you grew up playing baseball, you could pick up a rock next to his house, and you probably could throw that rock and hit the Sea of Galilee. That's how close he grew up next to the water. He was no water sissy. Jesus acknowledged fear. Here's the question. Do you acknowledge your fears. Step one, admit the issue. Step one, I'm afraid. Own it. Name your fears. Invite Jesus then to deal with them. Because here's the second observation, faith and fear are linked. Here's the passage. He said, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" Faith and fear are linked. Here's the question. Are you allowing fears in your life today to cripple your faith? Is your faith being hurt because of your fear? Well, note this. Peter asked Jesus to command him to face his fear. Don't miss this. This is pretty important information right here. Are you paralyzed in your fear? Do you feel like I can't even take a proactive step towards dealing with that fear? Well, do what Peter did, right? He asked Jesus to command him. Check this out. "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, Tell me to come to you on the water." In other words, command me. This word here, this language here, this isn't subtle. He's not saying nudge me. He's not saying push me toward it. He's saying command me. Because if you tell me to do it, you're Lord of my life. That's what I need to get over this fear, because I'm terrified to take this next step. Here's the question. What fear should you invite Jesus to command you to face? In other words, I don't want to do it, but Lord, if you tell me to do it, then I will. Then check this out. Peter actually stepped out of the boat. Peter gets a bad rep, right? He took his eyes off Jesus and then he started to fall, but all the while, he's out on the water. And 11 of his buddies are left quaking in their shoes back in the boat. Peter took a step of faith. He stepped into his fears out on the water. Here's the question. What is God calling you to step out of the boat with today? Don't stay in the boat. Step out in faith. I read a recent article from Psychology Today that was published not too long ago. These are the top 10 fears that hold people back in life. Look at them. Does one of those resonate with where you're at today? That you're struggling with? Maybe it's the fear of change. Oh my goodness, we've lived through a lot of it. Maybe it's a fear of loneliness. By the way, if you're wrestling with that one, don't step out of the boat. If you're lonely, we've been launching these SOAP studies. This last week we had a whole bunch of them happening, and a whole bunch of you have stepped into that. If you're feeling lonely, step out of the boat. Step into acknowledging that fear and going after it. Look at these. Pick one. Does one of these top 10 things that actually hurt people in their fear? Do something about it. Might I suggest that you have an action step to take here based on what we just looked at? First of all, as you pick your poison, number one, acknowledge it. Number two, replace it with faith. And then maybe ask Jesus to command you. And then follow him in obedience. Step out of the boat and deal with that fear. I'm going to invite our worship team to come out right now. As they do that, can I just leave you with this last thought? Don't let fear steal your joy. I told you a story earlier about a trip to the ocean, and I was scared. I'm still scared. I still wake up sometimes in fear thinking about that moment and what could have happened. We still go to the ocean, though. We went last year, kind of. We were close to the ocean. We were like, it was a bayou area, and we were playing in the water. And the next day, the guy who lived there was telling me that, yeah, just a couple days ago, we had like a 10 or 12-foot gator come swimming right past this dock that you were just jumping off of. Well, that's interesting. And then I'm watching the kids jump back in, and I jump back in with them. I mean, I don't want to live in fear because I don't want to let fear steal my joy. That story I told you about that Hilton Head vacation. I remember that, but that's not the strongest memory for me of that trip. One of the mornings I was out walking next to the water. The kids were still back in the condo asleep. And a baby shark, I kid you not, it like comes out of the water right at my feet. I'm walking next to the surf. And I could tell this shark is not doing well. I think it was dying, right? I picked it up. I thought my choices are to throw it out back into the water. It might die anyway, or I could do what any good father should do. I pick it up, and I take it back to the condo. So when the kids wake up, we've got something to play with, a shark out of the ocean. And so we, hilarity ensues. We start taking photos of shark attack, and hey, I'm going to eat the shark before he eats me. And then the next picture, the shark drips in his mouth, and oh, that's all kinds of funny things that happen there. And then big brother thinks it'll be hilarious to tease little sister. All kinds of fun memories from that moment. We still go to the ocean. Don't let fear steal your joy. Don't let it steal your joy, because Jesus is enough to cover your fears. Let me state that. Jesus is enough to exchange your fears for peace, for joy. John 10, verse 10 says, the enemy comes to kill, steal, and destroy. These sure sound like tactics to me of inspiring fear, of trying to grip you with fear. But Jesus finishes that statement. He says, I've come. I've come that you might have life and have it abundantly. Life to the fullest, abundant life. Don't live in fear. Live to the fullest. We're coming out of a pandemic right now. That'll preach. Don't let fear steal your joy. Because Jesus is enough to cover your fears.